Hello and welcome to this special edition of People in Profit. I'm Charles Pellegrin, and this week we're in Davos, Switzerland for the World Economic Forum, where leaders from the worlds of business, politics, and academia get together and assess the challenges facing the world the upcoming year and try and find ways to overcome them. Well, the Eurasia Group and its president Ian Bremmer have made it their specialty every year to highlight the top risks facing the globe. That's who we'll speak to first. Ian Bremmer, thank you for speaking with us on France 24.
Good to be back.
Your Eurasia Group report about the top risks for 2025 has as number one top risk a G0 world, G0 as opposed to a G8 or G7 or G20 world.
Yeah, we had G8 for a moment there, hot second.
What do you mean by that?
Well, it's an absence of global leadership. It is a return to the law of the jungle where the powerful do what they will, but the weak suffer what they must. And that is not a good place to not be making the new rules. The United States is essentially unwinding its own old global order. I mean, the United Nations was created by the United States with its allies in World War II in the Security Council and, you know, a Declaration of Human Rights and all this multilateral architecture that was aligned with American values and standards. And the American people have now decisively said, we don't support that anymore. Not on collective security, not on rule of law, not on free trade, and certainly not on the promotion of democracy. And that is absolutely the number one thing that other countries and companies around the world right now are concerned about, because they have to act. They have to react. Whether it's defense or capitulation or fight, they have to figure out how to deal with that in 2025.
You mentioned it. We're in Davos. The event is deeply tied to promotion of free trade, globalization. Donald Trump's showing up, promising protectionism, slapping tariffs on most goods entering the United States, slashing cuts. You've called it Trumponomics in your report. What's the impact for these businesses? You mentioned it. What can they do in the face of these tariffs, in the face of this new Trumponomics?
Well, inflation will go up, of course, because of the tariffs. And inflation will go up and growth will be constrained because of the deportations of illegal migrants. Now, there will also be lots of winners because the tax cuts will be extended from 2017. You'll also see regulatory rollback that creates more competitiveness for American corporations in those relevant sectors. Other countries, other companies are going to have to find a way to get on board with that. You already see it with the Net Zero Alliance being ripped up by banks that have been, you know, sort of here at the World Economic Forum for decades and decades. You see the DEI programs all falling to the wayside. You see Mark Zuckerberg, like, completely flipping his business model to now align with Elon Musk, not his best buddy, right? So that's what they're trying to figure out in very, very short order.
Now, a big part of this geopolitical fragmentation that we are talking about is the China-U.S. relationship. That had been on the rocks for years. I mean, they're still deeply enmeshed, but there's also uncoupling is happening, basically. But you warn of unmanaged decoupling, not uncoupling, that's a Gwyneth Paltrow sentence. But what do you mean by unmanaged decoupling of the U.S.-China relationship?
Yeah, it's not a goop situation. It's more about the management of a U.S.-China relationship is hard. Biden didn't do a great job at the beginning of his administration, but did by the end. 25 bilateral channels, high level, that were opened up and worked on the economy and on climate, on security, military, on diplomacy. The Trump administration will not do that. They will not put that kind of effort in executing on the relationship. And the relationship is very complicated, and there's no trust, and there's a lot of confrontation. So even if Trump wants a deal, and, you know, you see a little bit of this, you know, I respect Xi Jinping, there's a phone call early, they talk about TikTok, you can't get it done. And absent that, you're going to see a trade war. So we're talking about the most important geopolitical relationship in the world. The two most powerful countries are going to head towards direct conflict in a much more immediate way. And other countries don't want that because they don't want to have to choose between the U.S. and China. They don't want to choose economically. They don't want to choose strategically. It's important for them to have balance. They're going to have a harder time navigating that this year.
And finally, your report also mentions red herrings, things that seem like they could be top risks but actually aren't. And one of those that you mentioned is the possibility of a European breakdown. Tell us more.
Yeah, because Trump is very different from Biden on Europe. Biden really believes that in a more dangerous global order, you need a strong Europe. Trump does not. He wants a weak, fragmented Europe, a divided Europe, that he can have individual relations with weaker countries, get what he wants. But the fact is that Europe isn't buying it. Ursula von der Leyen is starting her second term. She's in stronger position now than she was 5 years ago. The new German government incoming, likely led by Friedrich Merz, will be aligned with that. Macron, he's got domestic problems, but foreign policy is still strong, is aligned with that. And Giorgia Meloni is not a bigger version of Viktor Orban in Hungary. She actually has a relationship with Trump and Elon Musk, but she also has a strong relationship that works very well with von der Leyen and the EU. And she is trying to help ensure that Europe's interests and equities are kept in line when she's engaging in Mar-a-Lago, when she's actually, as you and I talk right now in Washington, D.C., for the inauguration. That's very, very useful and constructive for the Europeans, at least this year.
Ian Bremmer of the Eurasia Group and of GZero Media, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Good to see you.
Artificial intelligence is possibly one of the buzzwords of this edition of the World Economic Forum. And the Eurasia Group has the unchecked development of AI as one of the world's top risks in 2025. So let's speak to Eric Singh. He's the president of the world's first AI-focused university, Mohammed bin Zayed University in Abu Dhabi. He's also the co-founder of GenBio AI, a biotech company that's developing the world's first AI digital organism.
ADO, AI-driven digital organism, is indeed a computer system that simulates all possibilities in biology. And why it is important? Well, we need tools, you know, to really decode biology and also transform biomedicine, because the way it is done now, it's still based on centuries-old tradition and the old-school thinking inherited from antiquity, unlike what we did with physics, with semiconductor, with many other science, where computing and mathematics are practiced in a much more advanced fashion.
AI seen as a risk and the potential collateral damage of the development of AI potentially being dangerous for humanity. Do you agree with that assessment by the Eurasia Group and Ian Bremmer?
Well, I think it's a very complex question that is not amounts to yes, agree or disagree, right? Because when we talk about risk, the first thing comes to my mind is that a hypothetical risk or it is a already materialized risk? And then we talk about regulation. It's really about when and how to regulate and what to regulate. In the particular space of AI, I think there is still a lot of ambiguity, because right now this umbrella term of AI means both the science, the product, the practice, and also maybe the cultural aspect of that. You know, taking the car industry, for example, when we regulate the car industry, we probably put the traffic laws, we put regulations on production, but we never heard about put regulations on the science behind the car, the combustion, the physics, and so forth, right? So AI right now, unfortunately, was overloaded with all these different meanings. I'm all for regulation when it comes to product and the utility and the risk management. But I have reservations to go into the basic science part and also, you know, understanding what that really is and what's the benefit and the risk trade-off.
Is a common framework on AI even possible at a global scale?
We need to first understand the potential and also the benefit and also the cost you're willing to pay. There's also maybe a misunderstanding or miscalculation of the level of advancement of AI right now. Yeah, we see AI all over the place. We felt we are maybe close to AGI in a year or sooner. But the reality is that it depends on what you define for AGI. I would say that a human level intelligence in the full spectrum, you know, beyond just being lingually fluent, being able to play chess, being able to solve a math problem, we have a lot of other abilities in our body, right? Embodied inferences, emotional intelligences, the ability to ask questions, to define tasks. All these are not yet in a current AI system. The question now is that do we want to wait until those happen, or we don't even want to see those happen, you know, through our regulation?
Eric Singh, you are the president of MBZU AI, as well as the co-founder and chief scientist of GenBio AI. Thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you very much for the opportunity.
That's it for this special edition of People in Profit from Davos. We spent most of the show discussing challenges and obstacles that need to be surmounted, but what about motives for hope in 2025? So we'll say goodbye, and on our way out, we'll hear what makes people optimistic about the future.
Well, if you think about it, jobs are collections of tasks that require skills. And it's true that we are starting to see skills that are required for jobs change really rapidly. Again, a lot of this has to do with AI and the fact that AI is kind of doing some of these tasks for us so that we can spend more time developing skills on other tasks that might be more cognitively interesting or cognitively challenging, new problems that haven't been able to be modeled by a large language model. So, in fact, what we're seeing is just a reallocation of how we spend our time towards things that are probably more interesting and more human, believe it or not.
My optimism for 2025 is that I see that the energy transition is happening. As electrification is taking place, a lot of processes getting electrified and becoming more sustainable. And I see it definitely in my business. We are selling more products than we actually can produce. And that's calls for optimism.
Well, whether it's Trump 2.0 or just the geopolitical tensions, my advice is keep watching for the future and get prepared. Take a look at geopolitical advisory. Make sure you understand what that's going to mean within your corporate boundaries. Make sure that you're taking a look at two factors. One, the impacts on supply chain and how you de-risk those supply chain. And two, the impacts on upcoming tax regimes. Whether that's positive or negative, you need to run simulations and understand what that means for your business.
The world looks completely fractured, captured by global oligarchies, but it's really the people's power. And you have seen people's power across the world challenging their rulers, making them accountable. So people's power now is going to reshape our future.